Hey, it's Bethany here. Thanks for joining us for another episode of Dialed In. Today's guest is Eva Janata. Eva is a powerhouse. So she helps North America's most recognized entrepreneurs in the women helping women economy stand out online. She offers thought leadership, marketing, and social media strategy to help women be heard, sought after, and hired. Prior to starting her business, Eva worked in corporate communications in Maryland, where she grew up. Today, she lives in Phoenix, Arizona, with her partner, Steve. In this episode, we talk about all kinds of things. We discuss fear, how to move past it, how to make decisions without being overwhelmed, trusting your intuition to really know who you are and live the life that you want, and so much more. You're going to enjoy this episode immensely. Don't forget to check out the show notes to get the resources that Eva talks about and to connect with her on LinkedIn. And as always, thank you for listening. Don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Now, let's get on with it. Hey, Eva, thank you for being here today. So you've all heard about Eva's job, what she does for her career, how she is really living her version of a big life in the introduction. And now I'm going to ask her to share her story with you. Wow, I just said her like 12 times in that sentence. Sorry about that. So Eva, our community here that listens to Dialed In are typically people that are either seeking a big life or thinking that there's a possibility of a big life for them. So I'd love for you to share a little bit about your story of how you came to live big.
Bethany, hi.
Hi.
It's a great question. So, I mean, I would say, and I'm sure I know you and a lot of your audience knows this, but like living big is a ever evolving like target, right? Like what living big means is going to change over time. And so for me, where it started was in my corporate career. I had a job at a company that I really, really loved. And I was pretty fresh out of university and I didn't really know. I mean, university, let's be real, doesn't really prepare you to be a professional unless you're being a professional academic. And so I was just very unprepared to enter the workforce. And for a number of different reasons, you know, I loved my corporate job and I felt like I was living really big in that role, but it wasn't working out very well. And so I decided to leave that job. And I was young and I was like, I didn't have a mortgage. I didn't have any pets. I didn't have any kids. Like I had really very little to lose. And so after I left the corporate job and I kind of, well, frankly, I had to go inward a little bit and figure out like what living big next was going to be, because I had a lot of a sadness about leaving that corporate career because I loved it so much. And I was really shocked that it worked out so poorly. So I decided to start a business because I was like, well, here I am. I've got nothing to lose. I've tried the corporate thing. It was different than I anticipated. Let me try this business owning thing. I mean, I really made the decision out of a lot of ignorance because I didn't have a plan. I didn't know anything about running a business. I was just winging it. And it reminds me that like living big often feels like winging it, right? Like you have a sense of intuition, but maybe it's not very strong and maybe you don't feel super confident about it, but you just have a sense that it's okay to try this thing. And that's what I did. So I tried to run a business. And at first I was doing professional organizing and that felt really awkward. So I needed to pivot and take it in a different direction. So I ended up starting to do freelance marketing because I had that background professionally. And that grew very organically for a few years. And then it started growing intentionally when I started trying. And I realized like at first I felt pretty insecure about this thing that I was doing, because like I said, I started a business without a plan and I started a business from a place of feeling pretty sad. And so it didn't sound like a very like epic reason to start a business. Like, I didn't start a business out of a deep sense of passion or like a really lofty goal. I sort of started a business out of not knowing what the heck else to do with myself at that time. And so it was only through doing it that I slowly but surely, through trial and error, figured out like what living big as a business owner and as a person who works from home and as a person who's not just kind of organically freelancing, but really intentionally building a company, like what that feels like and what that means to me.
That's a big deal. I mean, to just have the ability to be introspective and then to play around with ideas. First of all, that's brave. Really?
You know what? Feeling brave, like I think I thought for a long time, and I think I still catch myself thinking this sometimes, like I believe that feeling brave feels really good and like strong and powerful, when I think my experience more often is that feeling brave actually is terrifying and feels very, very scary.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, okay, let's talk about that. So as you're going through this, so you tried the professional organizing, you're like, not so much my jam. And then you moved into what you're doing now with marketing, digital marketing or media marketing. And what did you do when you felt really scared? Because let's be real here, fear can paralyze you, right? I mean, it can stop you in your tracks. So how did you move past that?
Well, therapy helped a lot. So when I left my corporate job and started my business, I would say that it was like the most, like the most deep trip through my psyche that I could have signed up for.
Mm-hmm.
Because I, you know, I took like something like an 80% pay cut when I started my business, and it brought up a ton of fear around money and a ton of fear around my ability to create value. And I had to figure out how to structure myself, since I didn't have the structure of a 9-to-5 anymore. And my anxiety just went through the roof, Bethany. It was brutal. And I didn't realize that's what it was at first. I didn't realize why I felt like my mind was hyperventilating all the time. And I didn't know that was a new experience. So, you know, through some conversations with my partner and like a lot of crying, I realized I needed help. And so I did start seeing a therapist, and that gave me tools to relate with myself in a more like compassionate manner when I was feeling scared.
Mm-hmm.
I also worked with a life coach and just started to learn something that I think is, you know, we should know since the time we're infants, but like I started to learn how to be kind to myself, like really intentionally.
Mm-hmm.
And because if I'm not purposeful about it, I'll kind of default to being mean to myself, which I think a lot of us struggle with, and it's very strange why that is. So therapy helped, some like practices for like taking better care of my relationship with myself helped.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the things that was most helpful was understanding polyvagal theory, which I've learned about more recently. And it's the idea that like your nervous system is on this continuum of feeling safe or feeling unsafe.
Mm-hmm.
And in the days of yore, like in our evolutionary history, unsafe would mean we were being attacked by like a huge animal.
Mm-hmm.
And nowadays that unsafe often feels like fear around like whether people approve of us, whether people like us. I'm certainly a perfectionist. And so perfectionism triggers a lot of fear for me.
Mm-hmm.
So what was really helpful to learn about polyvagal theory is like there are kind of two states of fear. There's dorsal vagal and there's, I think, sympathetic. I'm not totally remembering the names, but basically one is the fight or flight feeling, which is that mental hyperventilating. And the other, which I noticed in myself, is the paralysis that you mentioned, right? Where I would just feel like I like couldn't move my body. Like I would just feel frozen.
Mm-hmm.
And so learning to recognize when I was in those states and learning what some of the like actions I can take to make my system feel more safe, that has really helped me handle my fear. And sometimes what handling my fear means is just giving myself more time to get used to the thing that's scaring me. like I'll have an idea and it scares me and I'll think I'm going to execute the idea like next week, mm-hmm. but then I feel frozen and I just can't do anything. And so I've learned I'm not going to do it next week, but maybe if I give myself a month, I'll be able to get used to the idea and take some little baby steps and mm-hmm. prepare myself. And in a month's time, the idea won't make me feel frozen anymore.
Sure. I love that. And you know, there's so much tie-in between our mind and our body and that whole fight or flight response and the sympathetic yeah. and parasympathetic nervous system and yep. all of that. I love that you brought that into this because I think often we don't realize that we have any power over that. Like you yeah. feel it and you notice it and you just are in it. But
yeah,
you know, you have the power to overcome that. So is there a question that you ask yourself or is there a process that you use like when you're faced with the fear, whether it be the freezing or the, what did you call it? Mental hyperventilation. Is
yeah.
that what you said? I love that. I've never heard that term, but that's exactly.
What it feels like.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. I am so with you. I think entrepreneurship just like it's like opening the vault to all of your disempowering beliefs and all your crazy
yes.
like on so yeah. many levels. I mean, really, because you truly have to rely on yourself and trust yourself and your decision making. I mean, there's so much that you come up against when really you step out into entrepreneurship. And even as listeners are hearing this, even if it's not entrepreneurship for you, just right. stepping out into anything new, your body's going to be like, blah, put the brakes on. Wait a minute. We haven't done this before, you know, and anything that your mind doesn't feel safe at is going to trigger a fear response. So
yes.
Are there, like, what do you do? Like tangible, like things, what do you do, Eva, to move past it?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I remember one of the things that was so helpful for me to hear was actually from my sister who said, like, part of what, like, if you're in the mental hyperventilation space and you have a lot of anxiety, part of the way anxiety works is that it makes you want, like, you're frantically figuring out how to fix it. And that's like, that's just anxiety, kind of like meta anxiety, anxiety about your anxiety.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And so one of the things that's helpful for me to remember is that I don't have to fix it. Like nothing's wrong. I don't have to like follow a 10-step process or like take a certain kind of action. Like sometimes the best thing to do is to just let myself be in that state for a little while, because rather than trying to avoid it or run away from it or fast forward through it, if mm-hmm. I can just acknowledge it and experience it, it lasts much less long. So perfect. One thing to do is nothing,
right?
Ironically. But I would say other things that I find really helpful are going outside and taking a walk. You know, I live in the desert, and so taking a walk is not really an option in the summer, but right. rest of the year I can do that. Another thing I've found really, really helpful is, and I know everyone and their uncle says this, but exercise, like mm-hmm. stupid exercise really helps. And so I am a weightlifter. And one of the things I noticed is like, if I'm mentally hyperventilating, I'll go to the gym to lift. And an hour later, I honestly feel like a different person. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like it completely changes, I guess, my brain chemistry or my mm-hmm. body chemistry or whatever it is. But my mind is totally calm. So doing nothing, taking a walk or exercising. And another thing I try to do is just get really, really present. So lately, the way I do that is through meditation, where I do some deep breathing, and then I just purposefully think about the feelings that I want to have in my life, the goals that I have, things that I'm grateful for, and just deeply breathing into those, that vision or those that kind of important tenets of my life can help me calm and center myself.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I love it. So understanding what works for you, I mean, is probably a big key. I think the allowing yeah. the fear probably works for everybody, because when we fight it, it just stays around, right? The exercise piece and the going for a walk and all of that, you know, there's so much value in it, period. And physiologically, you know, your body releases endorphins when
right.
you're surrounded by nature and when after you exercise, right? And that's what right. makes you feel good and it puts you at peace. Plus, you're working off your anxiety, literally, right?
Yeah. It's amazing how effective it is. It's like comical.
Yeah, I know. It sounds so cliche, doesn't it? But if you yeah. just go for a walk. Okay, whatever.
Like
I tell
up.
My kids that and they're like, whatever, mom. But there's so much truth to it. So this is great. I love it. So, okay, I'm going to switch gears a little bit and ask you a little bit of a different question. I would imagine that when you are running your own business, and I'm saying this because this is what I experience, so that you're faced with a lot of decisions, a lot
oh
of things,
gosh.
Like because it's almost like the world's wide open to you. And you mm-hmm. can do whatever you want. And
yeah.
so one of the things that you wrote down or you typed in when you were filling out the information to come on Dialed In was making confident decisions and avoiding decision fatigue. And I would love for you to talk a little bit about that with our community here.
Yeah, I love this topic because I've definitely been on the struggle bus around it, just dithering in my decision-making a lot of the time and expending a lot of an energy on decision-making and then feeling bad about it. It's a thing. So you're right, Bethany, about like the whole idea that the world is wide open for you when you're an entrepreneur. But even if you're in a more traditional role or, you know, maybe you're a stay-at-home parent, like there are still so many choices.
Absolutely.
Whether like, it's from like the grocery store or choices of what kind of job you could apply for in the future mm-hmm. or choices about how to take care of your children. There's so much data as well that you could gather mm-hmm. to try to inform your decision. And I find sometimes that's helpful, but a lot of times the data just confuses me. So a couple of things that have helped me make really confident, decisive choices. So one of them is about once a year, I watch this TED Talk called The Paradox of Choice. And it's by Ben Schwartz, I'm pretty sure. And he makes just some really, really compelling points about why too many choices is really, really bad for us. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, on the other side, no choices is bad for us too. And there's a happy medium somewhere that's maybe a little different for everybody. But too much choice is hard, too little choice is hard. And so a lot of what I try to do is to eliminate decisions that I have to make. So I just try to give myself fewer options. So like I have very, very few clothes. So it's not hard to get dressed because I only have like 7 shirts. Mm-hmm. I just take turns wearing them. Other times, like, you know, I'm the oldest child in my family. I'm a perfectionist. I'm a people pleaser. And I have a tendency to do everything like in my relationship or in friendships sometimes. So another thing that I've gotten really careful about is like trying to delegate household stuff or lifestyle stuff or planning, like social planning for events. Like I used to just take on all of those tasks mm-hmm. and now I just don't. And I try to be really careful to have those boundaries to like not by default be in charge of everything. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so that cuts down on my decision making. So having fewer decisions to make is a big part of it. So another part of it is interesting. You know, research has found that women in particular tend to want to gather a lot of information before making a decision. Mm-hmm. But like I said earlier, there's such thing as too much information. So another way I make decisions is by just not letting myself research them and just like picking the first thing that I find or just like going with my gut, which I think is a really, perhaps, what's the word? Like underused part of decision-making. You know, there's a lot of information, our emphasis on like gathering data or making pros and cons lists or really logicking our way to decisions. Mm-hmm. And we're not really taught to like trust ourselves and just trust what we want. And this is also really true for women, but we're really not taught to trust our desires and our preferences. Mm-hmm. Women tend to be trained to like be accommodating and, you know, be easy to be around. And that can often mean that when it comes to making a decision about like where to order takeout or where to go for vacation, we're so disconnected from our desires that we don't even know what we want.
Right.
And so gently giving myself like the space to really tune into what I want. Like, do I want Thai food? Do I want tacos? Do I want neither? Do I really truly not care? And therefore I can delegate the decision to my partner and say, I don't care. Just pick what you want, which is sometimes easier. But sometimes we default to that, not because we don't care, but because we're afraid to pick something that the other person won't like. And then they might be unhappy. And then it'll be our fault. And we go in this whole like mental roller coaster and do all these gymnastics to try to like never make anyone else ever uncomfortable or the slightest bit disappointed. And as a result, we feel like garbage because we're ceding all of our decisions to other people. I have to take a deep breath because I could go on and on about this.
No, this is good. This is so good because when I first started working with a coach, the one of the first things we uncovered is that in me. Like I would constantly, I didn't even know what I liked because I was so busy trying to please and perform and make sure everybody else was okay. Like I didn't know. And, you know, I like being outside and I like, I really like seafood, and that wasn't anything I was raised with. You know, I always ate cheeseburgers because that's just what we had. And I didn't, I don't really love cheeseburgers. Like, I know that sounds silly, but truly listening to yourself and knowing who you are. I have a coaching client that I am working with, and she's an entrepreneur, and she messaged me and said, "Hey, I really want to take some next steps, but I don't know what people want." And I'm like, it's not about what people want. It's about what's inside of you. You know, listen to you, because what you're passionate about is what matters, because then you're going to attract the people to you that are your people. Right. Yeah. And it took me, I mean, I spent, oh my gosh, so much time researching and making sure I had the right tools and all the things when I first started growing a business, and it was just sidetracking me from actually being brave and stepping into doing it. Because fear, I mean, fear can make you procrastinate all kinds of things and then get easily overwhelmed by decisions, you know? And I think like, I know these sound like two different things that we're talking about with the decisions and the fatigue and the fear, but I think they're all connected. I mean,
Yeah. I mean, to your point, Bethany, like I often use the example of like choosing a restaurant or choosing a kind of food to illustrate how divorced we are from what we want. But like, to your point, like a person who's living dialed in knows that she likes seafood more than cheeseburgers, and it's not a good or a bad thing. It's just a neutral preference.
Right.
And like, it's, I think based on these sort of silly or quote unquote inconsequential decisions, like that's the foundation upon which your big, bold, decisions are made. And the more you can know what kind of food you want, and you get tuned in to what that feels like in your body, like you'll be able to access the same feeling when you're making a bold decision about your career. And you'll be able to recognize that feeling like, this is what I want. I'm not doing this to make somebody else happy. I'm not doing this because it's appropriate. This is what I want.
Yeah. And then being okay with that, because, you know, and I don't know, Eva, we didn't really talk about this prior to coming on, but I used to work in senior living and I'm a nurse by trade. And so I sat with a lot of people as they face death. And I heard story after story of, and they didn't say this, but what they said was, I wish I would have, you know, I wish I would have gone to school to be a teacher. I always wanted to go to Europe. I wish we would have traveled. I always wanted to see the ocean. And like, and it, they had, they, and it would sound like I had a really good life, but, and then all of their things would come out that they didn't do because, well, their husband didn't want to travel and they didn't want to upset him. But yeah, there's 100 other options. There's like women's bus trips. There's like girlfriend weekends. There's like, you know, taking your sister, whatever. And sometimes we get so caught up in pleasing everyone else that we don't even live our own lives. And then we get to the end and we, our grocery list of regrets is bigger than our list of amazingness, our list of living big, you know? And it began to really, really weigh heavy on me. And I was saddened by it. And at first I couldn't even put my finger on why I was so sad. And then I realized it was because I was watching dreams die with people. And then I met a resident. Her name was Maxine, and she didn't have any regrets.
She oh my gosh.
Lived big. Like out of my 10 years in senior living, I met one person that was like, so like her husband passed away. She bought herself a little RV and she traveled the US by herself. And, you know, she helped teach Chinese college students English when they came over, like volunteered, did all kinds of amazing things. And when she was facing her death, she's like, there are things I would do different, but I don't have regrets. I did the things I wanted to on my terms. And I'm like, it can happen.
Wow.
It can happen. Right. And so, you know, that's why I love to talk with people that are living that way. And I don't know about you. I do know about you because I know you wouldn't be doing this if you, you don't want to go to your deathbed and have a laundry list of, I really wanted to do this, but you know, I was afraid to say that I wanted to go to Europe because someone might not like that or think I was foolish for spending that much money or whatever the story is, you know, nobody wants to go to their deathbed and have their dreams die with them. And that's why I think it's so important to share our stories, to share how we're stepping out, how we're facing our fear, how we're moving forward, how we overcome the stress of multiple decisions to make, and how we understand that there's so much available for us. It doesn't matter where you're at. Stay-at-home mom, corporate leader, entrepreneur, you know, checkout cashier at Walmart. It doesn't matter. There are so many options for you. The world is wide open if you believe that it is.
Yeah. And if that, you know, if that feels overwhelming, the idea that the world being wide open feels overwhelming, I would suggest that that is a sign that you're probably could do some communicating with yourself about what you desire, because, you know, there are some things, you know, you don't desire. Maybe there are certain places, you know, you don't want to travel, certain jobs, you know, you don't want to have. And so it can be easy to make a no list, but it can be a lot harder to make a yes list. And I think if a symptom of that can be this enormous overwhelm with either decisions or with options, you know, choices you could make for your future. And my experience has been that the more clear I become on what I desire and learning to not judge that, which is another thing that we could go
That's
on and
another
on about,
episode. Like,
I know, truly, but like acknowledging what I desire, not judging it as like stupid or worthless or not worth it or blah, 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 blah. My overwhelm disappears. Because the other things, they're just not on my radar anymore.
Yeah, great point. Great point. I love all of it. This is so good. Oh my goodness. I feel like we could talk about this stuff for hours.
Honestly, yeah.
There's so many takeaways here from just our, you know, what, 20 plus minutes together. I have a whole list of things I've written down and I have a new TED talk to watch. So
oh my gosh. Yes. I really, really recommend that. And the other thing I'll say, Bethany, is I wrote an article about, how women can make strong, confident decisions. And I'd be happy to send you the link if you can want to put it in the show notes, because it kind of outlines some of the things we've talked about in more detail with more examples, and it might be helpful for people.
Absolutely. I'd love that. Definitely. We'll put it in the show notes. Speaking of show notes, Eva, how can people connect with you?
Yes. Okay. So, the first way I would say is if you're someone who is interested in, how do I want to put this? If you're someone who's interested in accessing your most kind of bold, magnetic opinions and expressing those through writing, that's one of the things I work on with my clients. And you can get a taste of that by going to 5magneticpillars.com, the number 5, and then spelled out magneticpillars.com, for my free email course where I teach you about the 5 magnetic pillars of thought leadership, which even if thought leadership is not your bag, it will really give you a sense of how to access those most bold, magnetic, enticing opinions that you have and that you have to share with the world. And I think that's a super important part of living dialed in and living big, is being really open and unapologetic about what we truly think. Mm-hmm. And this course will help you get in touch with that. So that's the first way. And then the second way is to connect with me on LinkedIn. One of the tenets I live by is I call it social media monogamy. So I really only use one social media network, and my network of choice right now is LinkedIn. And I'd love to connect with you there.
Perfect. All right. And I will put all of that information again in the show notes. So as we start to wrap up, Eva, is there anything else that is on your heart that you'd want to say to listeners before we close? No pressure.
I would just say, like, this is a conversation I have with myself all the time, and a way that I coach myself all the time. And I mentioned at the beginning, but it bears repeating always, which is that to be really, really, really a good friend to yourself, you know, be super kind and compassionate and patient and just loving of yourself. It's our most important, most enduring relationship we'll ever have. And it's often one that's neglected. You know, we might go to counseling for our marriages or go to, you know, see our girlfriends on the weekends, but we don't often nurture our relationships with ourselves nearly as much. And so as a reminder or permission, just to like be the most, like, just adore yourself and treat yourself well and give yourself treats and let yourself enjoy things. Just like, I could go on and on about this. I think it's so important, and we don't emphasize it enough.
I love that. I love that. I always tell my kids, you know, when you're talking to yourself and you're with yourself, be sure you aren't saying things that you wouldn't say to someone that you love dearly. You know,
absolutely.
Yeah. Be kind. That self-kindness. Sometimes we think being a jerk to ourselves is what makes us better, but actually, you know, studies show it just the opposite. So that relationship with ourselves is the most important relationship we'll ever have. You're right.
Absolutely.
Love it. Well, I wrote down three takeaways. Now, this is just from our fear conversation. I wrote down like four other ones from the decision conversation, but we'll just stick with fear right now. Listeners, you'll have to take your own notes on the decision-making one. And be sure to check out Eva's article that's in the show notes as well. All right. Number one, I wrote, fear is a sign that you're making change, right? Because if you're never afraid, it means you're never doing anything new. So just recognize and acknowledge that, like, that uncomfortable feeling, you know, as long as like your life isn't in danger and a bear's not chasing you, like, more than likely, it's just a sign that you're stepping out into something new, and that is okay. Which brings us to number two, allow the fear, feel it, don't fight it. When you fight it, it just stays around longer and you just hang on to it, you know, just allow the fear and don't fight it. And then number three, get to know what works for you to work through that, mental, what did you call it?
Mental hyperventilating.
Yes. The mental hyperventilating, whether it's going for a walk, whether it's deep breathing, exercising, whatever that is, but pay attention to how you feel and how you can release some of that frantic energy that builds up when you feel fearful. So Eva, it has been a pleasure talking with you today. Oh my goodness. Thank you so much for being here.
This was fun, Bethany. I really enjoyed our conversation.
I'd love to have you back and talk more about some of the things that we mentioned that we couldn't dive into. So we'll have to connect on that. Listeners, thank you for spending time with us today. I know there's a lot of places that you could be spending this half hour at, or spend your half hour listening to, and I just appreciate you being here with us. Thank you for subscribing so you never miss an episode. And until next time, take action, live big, and stay dialed in.